Broadcasting live from Forward Observer Central Command in Austin, Texas, it's the man always out front on the issues. You're listening to Out Front with Samuel Culver.
Hello and good afternoon. Welcome to Out Front with Samuel Culper. I'm your host, Samuel Culper, and I'm coming to you live from Forward Observer Central Command here in Austin, Texas. First, I'm really glad to be seeing some responses to yesterday's show. So we're posting these up on YouTube on the main Forward Observer site, the main Forward Observer YouTube channel now. That's going to continue. And I've been really happy with the response. We have to develop soft power starting locally. Because I tell you, a lot of folks are saying that national level institutions have been neutered, which is true. Many of them have been. And if you're not building political and social institutions at the local level, then you will have a 0% chance of building institutions at the national level, and you'll also have zero institutions left in another decade if we don't start building these things locally. And there are a lot of groups out there, a lot of organizations out there that are building local social power. And to that I say, keep it up, but we can't stop there. We got to keep going. Now, what do I mean by social power and social institutions? Well, for one, we started last August. So our group now is officially 1 year old. We started a multi-county preparedness network, which may not seem like a lot. You may look at that and you say, well, what can you actually do? But our level of outreach right now is through the roof. We are meeting with established organizations in a 7-county area. That's a pretty big area. And here in Central Texas, we're linking up with local political groups and social groups and religious groups, and we are providing training opportunities and identifying ways to build social power at the county level. So I say it's a preparedness network, and it is. We are focused on preparedness, but we're focused on a lot of different kinds of preparedness. It's really a network to build. Not just an information sharing network, but there's a lot of uses. I've talked about the True Texas Project, which they have built a grassroots political institutional power at the county level up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I hope that continues to expand. I know there are a lot of state level political groups or county political groups in lots of other places. I think the Tea Party is one example, the county Tea Party groups back in the early 2000s. Those are a great example. Or I should say the early 2010s. Those are a great example of building political and social movements locally. And if you don't have one of those, or if one does not exist, or if you want to start a new effort, I highly encourage you to do that. You can start through your local church. You can do like I did, start a preparedness network. It should be pretty easy to get church pastors to get signed on to a preparedness network. I mean, I think isn't that a kind of a tenet of Christian responsibility, is to be prepared? And then you could start reaching out to other churches and see if you can get them on board and maybe have a monthly meeting, or start with one meeting, right? A 30-minute or a 60-minute meeting or something like that. Basic preparedness for Christians. Start that at the church level, or start that at each church. And yeah, it's going to take a little bit of effort. But we start talking about the threats, right? We talk about tactical environment, tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, all sorts of bad stuff can happen that we need to be prepared for. Then we can branch out to kind of strategic level threats and Well, that, you know, that's a little bit more effort. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a webinar for everybody and talk about these strategic level threats that we should be preparing for. And then you can take that information and then you can go warn other people about that and show them some pretty substantial challenges the United States has coming in the next, starting in November and continuing on through probably several decades, at least a generation. And then show them, hey, that's all the more reason to prepare for what's coming. And this is not a Teotihuacan end of the world or whatever, right? This is not Armageddon we're talking about. Life goes on. It's just going to get a little more tougher. It's going to be tougher from here. So start one if you're a churchgoer. Start a church preparedness meeting or give a church preparedness presentation. There's lots of stuff out there about here's how you can get started with storing food and water. Something as simple as that. One thing I may actually do with this webinar is if people want, actually, I am going to do this. If you can get a meeting going at your church, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a live stream. We can do it on a Wednesday night or whatever time, and we can do this live. And as long as you have a projector or a TV or a screen or whatever that people can get around, you can watch me do this live presentation, this live video. It'll be me and, you know, talk about stuff that's going on. And I'll take your questions. And if you want to do that at church or a community level or, you know, whatever group you want to do that with, it'll be free. Just pipe in. Just literally turn on the feed and let's watch it. And let's all get on the same page and move forward with these community-based organizations. Reach out to other churches. See if you can get them on board. Another thing that we've done locally that I would highly encourage you to do is get folks signed up for maybe text alerts if you can do that, or some kind of phone tree if you're comfortable with it, if they're comfortable with it. Start an email list or start a weekly email newsletter. That's something that we are starting locally. We're going to elicit information from everybody in the community talking about, you know, threats and changes and things that are happening in this county especially, and do a weekly newsletter on all these things. Start an information sharing network. And you know what? You may say, well, there's not a whole lot of information to share right now. Well, come November, you may be changing this to a daily email newsletter for all I know, for all anyone knows. Identify a mission or a mission statement that everyone can get behind. Hey, this organization exists to prepare for emergencies at the community level through training, networking, information sharing, cooperating in disaster relief projects, providing humanitarian aid or charitable relief or whatever you want to call it. And then go out and offer medical training and communications training and firearms training and intelligence training. You might start off with a handful of folks. I don't even remember how we didn't have a ton of people. I don't know, 10 or something like that at our very first meeting. And that was just kind of by word of mouth, and we didn't really push it a whole lot. As a matter of fact, I think I had such a sense of urgency when I started this. It was basically like, hey, let's just have a meeting this Saturday. Invite all your friends. By the way, we on our Discord channel, I started a new chat channel called Out Front. And so if you want to jump on and chat during this live show, I'll post the Discord links somewhere for everyone to join. So if you have comments or, you know, questions or whatever throughout the show, I'll be live chatting with you as well. So at any rate, this group might start with a handful of folks, but keep pushing, keep meeting, keep networking. Look at other civic or social, political, or religious organizations in your area. Invite them, get them roped into this as basically a new node of this countywide or maybe a multi-county emergency preparedness organization. And then you know, maybe you'll have a dozen people at the next meeting, and then keep pushing. And maybe you can build your network to dozens or hundreds of people. And then when an emergency does happen, you'll have dozens or hundreds of people to reach out to for support or to respond to whatever's happening. That doesn't necessarily have to be an emergency. That might mean getting hundreds of people to go out and support this local sheriff candidate who is pro-Second Amendment. Or that might be mobilizing social opposition to some dumb rule or some dumb regulation that your city council or county commission wants to pass. And you show up and you say, don't do this, it's stupid. And then maybe it won't happen. And you get that because you've built this social organization, essentially. It's a preparedness network because we exist to be prepared for emergencies and disasters. But it has a lot of other uses. And those two that I just suggested are prime uses that we can do that's not during an emergency. The point is to build out this network of volunteers and a word I like to use, sensors, a network of sensors, and then be able to gather information from these sensors and then be able to mobilize when we need people to solve problems. And look, I'm not taking credit for this. Lots of other organizations exist out there that do exactly this. I just started one in my own local area now. This, by the way, is exactly what the left does in urban areas. And this is increasingly what they are doing in suburban areas, especially targeting young people in the suburbs. I mean, that is their next big target. How do we flip the suburbs? They're already talking about, they're already talking about exercising political power at the suburbs. They're trying to do this in a lot of rural areas, this community organizing, and it's all for political power. And if our community is being organized and we are not organizing our community, then all this community power could very well be flipped against us. And that's exactly what's happening in the suburbs right now. If we are not developing counter-institutions to push back politically and socially, then they are probably going to win. I'm going to repeat one thing from yesterday's show because it bears repeating. This is what the far left is doing, and this is very likely to be exactly where they are headed in the future. And this is what we're up against, by the way. And so building some counter-institutions or building these groups, which I call institutions, political or social institutions, to expand our social and political power. And now, look, when I say expand social and political power, I'm not talking about authoritarianism. I'm talking about getting good people, you know, as long as we are participating or live under this system, we may as well be competing in it and getting good people elected. And at some point in the future, that all may change. But for now, if that's the system we live under, you know, I know a lot of people who say, well, I'm not going to participate, right? We withdraw our consent and now no one consents. And okay, well, the problem with that is people are still making rules. And insofar as we're trying to organize a community, I would really like to live in a politically advantageous area, because here's what's good. You know, one reason why I moved out of Austin, outside the city limits, because I started thinking about all the things that could happen in Austin, all the things that could happen on my way to work, while I'm at work, while I'm out at lunch, when I'm in my home. And I thought, you know, if I ever had to use a firearm, very low chances, but let's just say I had to one day. I had to use a firearm and I was arrested and I faced a trial. If I faced a trial in a jury of my peers, who are my peers in Austin? These people are not my peers. Not in Austin, they're not. And that's a very politically disadvantageous place to live if you are going to face a trial by a jury of your peers. So I moved to a place where the human terrain and the political terrain was much better. It was way more favorable. So this thing that I'm going to repeat is this essay that was written in January 1930 by communist revolutionary Mao Zedong. It is entitled, A Single Spark Can Start a Prairie Fire. And I said on yesterday's show, there are bookstores and there's a newsletter and there's all sorts of stuff online called Prairie Fire. And I was talking with a friend of mine earlier today who stopped by the office. And I said, you know, he saw this book by Mao Zedong on my desk. And we started talking about it. And I said, you know, the more I read Mao, the more all this stuff that the far left is doing makes complete and total sense to me now. A single spark can start a prairie fire. And this is what Mao explains. He goes over this general strategy of Maoist revolution. Number one, establish base areas. You have to understand, all this community organizing that's happening in the suburbs and in rural areas too, they're building base areas. They're building favorable human terrain. They are building, if it ever gets to this point, what Mao is specifically talking about is building areas where there's a base of support for guerrillas or guerrilla fighters, and eventually conventional, the Red Army, right? The conventional military power. Identifying people who can provide shelter, provide food and water, transportation, information and intelligence, lots of stuff. Number one, establish base areas. That's what the left has done in these cities. When George Soros spent millions of dollars, I think he spent something like $20 million in the 2018 cycle, which was a record. In this cycle, I think he's spending like $50 million or something this time. But when he gave all those money, when he gave all those political campaign contributions to these far left district attorneys, well, we're seeing the fruits of that labor right now. When these district attorneys are saying very selectively, we are going to charge you, but we are not going to charge them with any crimes. Just like this Kim Gardner, very selective, curiously judicious in who she charges with crimes and who she does not charge with crimes. That's a base area. You have to understand, for the far left, that is a base area now. And Soros was not shy talking about this stuff. He explained it out. And I don't mean to hammer on Soros like a conspiracy theorist, but these are facts. Soros even talked about, hey, we have to, if we want to advance the cause of social justice, that starts in the local judicial system. And that's why he got all these district attorneys elected. So number one, Mao says, establish base areas. Number two, systematically set up political power. And this is exactly what's happening in urban areas. This is exactly what is happening in a lot of suburban areas. Right? I mean, I don't know if you saw this, but there was an analysis done of how suburbs in Philadelphia have changed from solid red to solid blue over the past something like 20 years. And yeah, a lot of that's due to demographic change. But those voting bases are what allows these political power systems to be set up. Moving on to number three. After you establish a base area and you set up political power, you expand the people's revolution first through recruiting town Red Guards. Red Guards was essentially the peasant militia. I think I said yesterday there are even some of these communist groups called themselves Red Guards. I think the equivalent today would be a lot of these anti-fascist groups in these big cities. They are effectively Red Guards. Mao says after you recruit town Red Guards, then you move to district Red Guards, and then you move to county Red Guards, and then you set up local Red Army troops. So the Red Army troops, they're the ones that do the fighting. The Red Guards, they're the ones that do the defending. And then finally, you spread revolutionary political power by advancing in waves. You everything that you're doing in these areas, you continue doing in more areas. And you assault the nationalist areas, and you assault the positions of the White Army using the Red Army. And now we're talking about conventional warfare, which is the third stage of a Maoist insurgency. Now, I'm not saying that all this exactly is what's going to happen in the United States, but establishing base areas, setting up political power systematically, and expanding the People's Revolution through developing of Red Guards or your local anti-fascist groups. It's exactly what we've seen happening. I'm just throwing it out there. District and county level. And then at some point, especially if President Trump wins re-election, we are probably very quickly going to see a lot of this stuff, a lot of the rest of this stuff, fall into order. Mao writes of this strategy. He says, quote, "Only thus is it possible to build the confidence of the revolutionary masses throughout the country." He continues, "Only thus is it possible to create tremendous difficulties for the reactionary ruling classes, shake their foundations, and hasten their internal disintegration." And in the words of Forrest Gump, that's all I have to say about that. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. Moving on. You know, I came across this clip, and this interview happened some weeks ago. I want to play it for you. But I just now saw it. And let me set this up. So it's Cardi B, who is a rapper, and presidential candidate Joe Biden on a live stream. Presumably, this is a virtual campaign stop for Joe Biden. And Cardi B is talking about police reform. And I'm going to play the clip for you right now. Here we go.
And, you know, it's fair for cops, too. If you kill somebody that doesn't have a weapon on them, you go to jail. You know what? If I kill somebody, I got to go to jail. You got to go to jail, too.
Now, I've listened to this and seen the video so many times. It's kind of lost its comedic appeal. But it was very funny when I saw it this morning. And a lot of it's lost on just the audio, but you ought to see Joe Biden's face. He is absolutely confused. He does not, I don't even think he knows really where he is. And you can see him kind of nodding and trying to follow along as she's saying this stuff. It was funny. The last thing I want to talk about in today's show is an article from the Daily Beast. What happens when ex-Navy SEALs go What happens when ex-Navy SEALs go full QAnon? And it's all about a number of SEALs who are saying inflammatory things on Facebook and apparently promoting some kind of QAnon thinking or conspiracies or whatever. And there's a guy. His name is Mark Andre Argentino. He's not a SEAL. He is an associate fellow at the Global Network on Extremism and Technology. And they monitor QAnon conspiracy theories. And here's what he had to say about former SEALs becoming involved in countering anti-fascist demonstrations and violence. He says, quote, he's talking about the violence of QAnon people, apparently. He says, quote, "The violence we've seen has been by people without acumen and physical training. Where it could get scary is with people who do have training," end quote. And this is in response to this guy, this Fernbaugh, what's his name? Lewis Garrick Fernbaugh, who's a former SEAL. And there was this video that came out. He was out in Austin, he was out in Portland. And he apparently had infiltrated this anti-fascist march. And then it's nighttime. And the anti-fascists say that he threw pipe bombs at them. Well, I watched the video, and it looks like what he probably had is some kind of homemade flashbang. because he was being followed. He didn't want to be followed. Apparently, he's trying to egress and leave the area. And so he threw out this thing, and everyone stopped while he ran away, and then eventually exploded. And it wasn't, I mean, I say exploded. It literally did explode, but it looked more like a flashbang, more than like a pipe bomb, like he was trying to injure people or harm them. So at any rate, someone came, they followed him back to, I guess, his vehicle or something. He's, you know, trying to leave. And he's like, oh, I'm not the guy you want to F with today. And, you know, and other things. So they got his face on video now. And I guess now the FBI is looking for him. And so this whole article is about what happens when former SEALs get involved in countering, well, they don't say anti-fascist violence, but that's what a lot of these guys are talking about. And then, you know, I thought about some of the attention that American Contingency is getting. Now, American Contingency was started by this guy named Mike Glover, who's a former, he's a retired Army Sergeant Major, team guy. He's in Special Forces. And basically, he's had it up to here. My hand's above my head. He's had it up to there with all this violence and the rioting and people, innocent people, being beat up in the streets. I don't know if you saw this video from Portland the other night, but this guy is trying to drive through this area, and he swerves out of the way. He hits like a tree or a telephone pole or something like that. They drag him from his vehicle, and he gets knocked unconscious, and he's laying on the ground, and he's not moving. And he starts to come to, right? Some people like are trying to kind of shake him and help him up. He comes to, and he sits up, and you can see the dude's just in a daze. Like he's like Joe Biden. He doesn't know where he is. And then all of a sudden, this guy, I think who knocked him out the first time, or at least assaulted him the first time, comes up, and from kind of behind or to the side, like diagonally behind this guy, kicks him right in the face, like right in the cheekbone part of the skull there. And the dude gets knocked out again, and he falls down to the ground, and he's just out cold again. And the guy who kicked him later posted on Snapchat that he was probably going to be arrested for murder. He knew what he did. It's going to be interesting to see if this guy in Portland, by the way, it's going to be interesting to see what he's actually charged with. So at any rate, people are sick and tired of seeing this stuff happen to innocent people. And so AMCON and some of these other, there's a lot of several veterans groups out there who basically said, look, we're tired of this. We're going to go out. We're going to prevent this from happening in our own areas. And I think it's a great idea. You want to talk about building a network that can be mobilized? You know, maybe the next time a protest gets violent or there's looting or some kind of rioting in your area, and if police aren't protecting local bystanders, innocent people, in some places they will, some places they won't, then a lot of people, myself included, feel like we have a duty to step in and to protect our fellow innocent citizens from this violence. So at any rate, this whole article in the Daily Beast is about the dangers of guys like former SEALs coming out and getting involved. One of the quotes that the Daily Beast pried off this guy's Facebook page, Stephen Ralston, who is a former Navy SEAL, apparently allegedly said on Facebook, quote, "If these people aren't brought to justice, there's going to be some effing street justice doled out." Of course, he didn't say effing. And a lot of veterans, especially from the special operations community, a lot of people feel this way. And one question I've had all along is, why are we not seeing more of a right-wing response? And I wouldn't even say right-wing response. Why are we not seeing any kind of real response at all? I mean, law enforcement's doing this, the here and there. Why are we seeing all this revolutionary activity and this insurgent activity And why are we not seeing a lot of counter-revolutionary activity and counter-insurgent type of activity? And I don't know. And the people, these far leftists that I follow on social media, they've asked the same thing. Why are more people not rising up and stopping this kind of stuff? Where is the right wing here? And I don't know. I think there's probably a sense of understanding that the left does a lot of this stuff and they can get away with a lot of these things. But the second right wing groups show up, they're going to be hauled off to prison if they do some of these things that the left is getting away with. That does it for my time today. I hope this talk was beneficial. I think we're at a time. I think we're at a time when if the government doesn't put an end to this, we're going to start seeing a lot more veterans especially get involved. And frankly, people are probably going to be killed after that. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the show. I'll be back tomorrow, 2 p.m. Central, broadcasting live on Forward Observer Radio. You can listen live at forwardobserver.fm, and eventually we'll be set up to live stream on YouTube. If you're catching the podcast version of this and you think this show deserves a 5-star rating and review, please give me a 5-star rating and review for the show. That does it for me for today. Until next time, be well and...